Boy, I felt comforted that my company cared enough about me to say, here's the vaccines you should have. Here's the in case of emergency phone number. Here's your travel medical program.
Welcome to the New Nomad Podcast, hosted by Alan and Andrew of Insured Nomads. Join us as Alan and Andrew interview and explore the community of people and ideas that embody the nomadic spirit. Tune in to incredible discussions with thought leaders each week that will help you take full advantage of the cross-border remote work lifestyle. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to the New Nomad. We have a really interesting guest today. Benjamin Bader of Newcastle University Business School and the Res Forum will join us today to talk about future of work, duty of care, expatriate management. Who knows where this conversation is going to go today? Actually, I think it might even go a little bit towards Legos. So stand by. That should be a very interesting conversation. Andrew, my co-host and a partner in travels, how are you doing today? And what's on your mind?
Doing very well. It's a lovely day to ponder on the future of work and how leadership should evolve with that. But, you know, when we look at this, one of the things that stands out to me is that many times we catch ourselves with 30 windows open on our screen.
Yeah.
You know, how effective is multitasking? Where are we going with the way we work and how we've worked in the past? Is it evolving in a wise manner?
Well, you know, it's interesting when you bring that up because, you know, we've heard of companies that say this day is not a day you're going to do any Zoom or Teams meetings. Or people say, I'm not going to answer emails. I'm going to do my projects. It is interesting because we're constantly distracted. And the hard part of it is sometimes we need to rest our mind a little bit and move into a different space. And I think that's a real opportunity for us out there, whether you're resting your mind through exercise or other projects or hobbies, or perhaps using Legos along those lines. So maybe that would be a great time to bring Ben in. Ben, welcome to the New Nomad Podcast. First off, where are you at today? How are you doing? And welcome aboard.
Hi. Thank you very much for the invitation. I am in beautiful Colour Coats, actually, which is the coast in Newcastle upon Tyne, England. And I'm doing wonderful. I'm really excited to talk to you guys. It was really interesting to listen to some of the previous episodes. I hope I can share a thing or two that's interesting for you.
Well, I know that you've done a lot of studies, both at the Res Forum and at Newcastle, on duty of care, protecting yourself, et cetera. We'd love to get your thoughts. The pandemic has had many people step back, but even before then, things like the volcanoes in Iceland, the Fukushima disaster. I mean, there's so much need to protect people and duty of care. So maybe a quick comment for you, for the uninitiated, what is duty of care in your opinion, and really how people can help, you know, understand that concept and protect themselves?
Well, you're starting out with a big one, Alan, here. I mean, what's duty of care is an excellent question because there's two components to it. So the first component is the actual legal definition of duty of care that is in, well, differs from country to country. But at the end of the day, what the law tells you that you as an employer have to do in order to protect your employees or maintain the health. And a lot of the things like about avoid accidents and so on, and what you can kind of do, what you have to provide. Now, the bigger thing in terms of duty of care, what we look at in the study is basically, particularly with an Iron Global Mobility, the bigger thing is what is going beyond the legal definition, what you have to do as an employer and what you should do. And Andrew mentioned an interesting thing about the different meetings popping up, multitasking, different screens open, and these kind of things. And the new normal. I can't say new normal. I don't even know if we are in the new normal. But what I mean is, like, does an employer actually have a duty to at some point, like, say, stop, you can't do it, and that way you have to, or basically take it back a notch. Other things, travel, very interesting thing right now. Can you travel? Should you travel? Should you ask your employees to travel? Or if they want to work from anywhere because that's what they prefer to do for their private reasons and so on, what is your duty of care there? So I know I'm not giving you an answer to that because it's much too complex to narrow it down to one answer. If you really want to look at duty of care in a way I think companies can make a difference, should be connected to employer value proposition.
I mean, I always thought of duty of care also is empowering your employees and their family members to remain safe. And the example I like to use is before I traveled in work, they made sure I had the correct vaccines. I was vaccinated before I was allowed. And I might not have even known that. A lot of it is information and support, et cetera, on that. And I love what you're saying. It's beyond the legal definition, because maybe that wasn't really part of the definition. But boy, I felt comforted that my company cared enough about me to say, here's the vaccines you should have. Here's the in case of emergency phone number. Here's your travel medical program and other things like that. And I probably forgot a few there. Is that your feeling too, that it's kind of going that little extra distance to give people the comfort that they know they're supported?
Let's talk about global mobility. In the study we did, ironically, like it was like completed a couple months before the global pandemic. But at that time, more than 30%, I think it was slightly over one third of the companies didn't even do an individual risk assessment for each assignment. So in terms of what you do and go the extra mile, I think there's a lot of room for improvement.
One of those aspects of duty of care that I believe is so crucial, and in that definition, is the employee's well-being. But how is that actually addressed in many contexts? We have an HR department that they can reach out to. Well, that's not really a safe place if it is internal many times, because if they're going through a struggle, they're not going to tell their benefits folks that they're actually having a hard time with their assignment. They need that third party, and it may be a marital struggle or a child that was left behind and off in school, whether boarding school or university, and having therapists, access to actual therapists to speak to that. Not just an EAP, but a full-on well-being partnership with the employer. That's one of my strong points, having lived in expatriate assignments various times. I'm passionate about that. It's a key part of that definition that you referenced.
That's a brilliant point. I think the idea of well-being is so important to have a look at. I mean, mental well-being, bigger than ever probably since COVID, or maybe not bigger than ever, but at least more awareness is created than ever around that. But yeah, you're right. I mean, can you go to your employer? Can you say, hey, listen, I have some issues here. Where should I go to? We certainly need more awareness on that front.
So as you break this down, there's travel, there's kind of risk, there's security, there's health, there's probably legal concerns out there. If you were listening to this podcast and you're kind of new to duty of care, and I know there's a lot there, if you were building a program, would you first build it for somebody who's or been deployed to another country with some sort of evacuation, both for security, health, and natural disaster? Would you build it with maybe a geo-position tool, a geolocation tool where people could track you and help you right away? What are some of the components that you really advocate to help protect people in duty of care?
That's an excellent question, because from my observation, I mean, the first party that gets involved in building the duty of care is the lawyer. That is for apparent reasons. And I'm not saying you shouldn't have lawyers involved because companies need to protect their back. But the point is, particularly in global assignments, who's typically not involved is the expatriate. You've got the lawyer, we take that. You've got the HR people, you may have global mobility manager, but in very rare cases, you actually ask the expatriate what they feel is necessary. So if I was going to build that, I would do a workshop and get all these people in the room, have the lawyer take notes. I got to be careful what I say about lawyers, nothing against lawyers. But the issue here is, it's yes, the legal side needs to be covered. But I believe the duty of care is much more than just meeting the word of the law. We need to take up the spirit of the law.
Interesting. Okay, so as I look at your role and your experience as deputy head of the department, what's that department at Newcastle?
Okay. Well, that's university structures are a bit different than the corporate structures, I suppose. But at the end of the day, the subject group is nothing else but a department with 60-some full-time academics. And of course, we have a duty of care as well for our staff.
Yes. So at Newcastle, you're looking at leadership and the future, I believe, the future of work. How do you feel that those leading companies have to change their perspectives as the global workforce is changing? Even manufacturing is saying, no, we're sending a large portion of jobs out.
Excellent. Yeah. How do we achieve change? The first thing to change is probably trust. More trust to employees. I mean, in academia, again, it's a little bit different because academics used to work from home quite a lot. So there's this split between your research work and your classroom work. And of course, got to be in the classroom to teach, or at least until before the pandemic. But I think trust is the first step. So if you have your people doing their work, it shouldn't matter when they do it. It shouldn't matter like how they do it to a certain extent. And most importantly, if they're not on standby for something on call all the time, you should not assume that they are not working. But on the other hand, there should be very, very clear standards in terms of particularly when teams need to work together, how the workflow is arranged. Because like if I, for private reasons, I want to get up really early, get things done. So my workday starts like, say, 6, but I want to be done like in the early afternoon because I want to go right? Spend time with my kids, go surfing, whatever. Versus my colleague has a completely different day, and then they want to get up later, sleep in, and like work late. Or yet somebody else has a similar work pattern to me, just happens to be in a completely different time zone. Then we've got a problem in a way when we need to talk together and work on projects. Now, I'm not saying this is impossible. There's a lot of opportunity out there as well, but the rules of engagement need to be very clearly defined. Let me say that. I can give you an example if we've got the time. So I'm currently working on a study with a colleague who's in California. But the interesting thing is, like, when we work on this paper, like, I spent a significant amount of time today on the paper, basically handed it over shortly before this podcast. And now she can start working on that because it's just her morning in California, can continue that. And then there's a version to continue for me tomorrow in the morning. So it's actually a brilliant thing. But the rules of engagement need to be defined.
It's interesting because what you just described, you also hear about nowadays with famous musicians and bands. They might record in one location and then they send the music over to the other location and somebody adds. And this is what I think you touched upon great with the future work is there's a huge time shifting. There's not like 9 to 5 is not a definition that applies anymore. Yeah. I mean, there might be people that work, like you said, afternoon to late evening. There's different lifestyles. Or there might even be people that, you know, today's a sunny day. I'm going to go surf. Tomorrow is supposed to be rainy. I'm going to work 14 hours. And I love what you said on that. And it's hard for employers because there are some employers that say, I don't care when you work as long as you get work done. Yeah. And then there's more traditional employers like, I want to make sure you're doing 40 hours. So what's your perspective on that? And what if maybe some of the studies that you've seen on how flexible employers are towards these type of arrangements?
That's an interesting approach because some of the companies I thought were like tech companies who were more forthcoming in this regard were actually taking back a little bit of this flexibility. I mean, the other thing we have to keep in mind, like what we're talking about, I mean, it applies to a very narrow field of people, especially say like in office jobs and that kind of jobs. Like, I know what would I think like today's bin day here in color codes. So what would I think about like when the bin men decide they want to work night shifts and start coming with a truck through the street and like make all these noises in the middle of the night? I don't think most people will be particularly happy about that. So I know there's limitations, and in companies, what I have encountered, there's sort of lots of discussions going on between those people who technically can do it because the job allows to do that, and those where the job absolutely doesn't allow that. Take Daimler, for instance, Germany. I mean, they have a policy now that everybody can work from anywhere they want if, and that's a big if, the actual job allows to do that. So they're not going to build an assembly line for the C-class in your backyard. They are going in this direction versus other companies are actually coming back to a more normal 9-to-5 office approach.
So you have a very interesting thing on your CV, your background. Could you explain to us this? What is a certified Lego Serious Play Facilitator? It's one of the most interesting things I have seen out on anybody's CV in quite a while.
Yes, I must interject there. I'm being a serious Lego guy myself. Years of Lego play creatively, my kids as well. I want to hear this.
Brilliant. Well, I may use the opportunity to say thank you to Sean Blair and Serious Works, who's my trainer. So at the end of the day, Lego Serious Play is a facilitation method that gets people to achieve results in workshops or in settings that go beyond normal verbal talking. So what people do is they respond to abstract questions and build complex answers with bricks. So metaphors, putting bricks together. It's a really interesting way to help people to access regions of the brain that are normally not so easily accessible. So basically get out the inner child. There's a brilliant saying, like, we don't stop playing because we grow old. We grow old because we stop playing. And I think Lego Serious Play is a brilliant way to let go of the normal inside-the-box thinking and get some sort of outside-the-box.
Okay, so I'm going to have to research that and look into that for our globally distributed team, because that sounds very intriguing and actually something that could really, really help with efficiency and getting those juices flowing in a different way. But also, you know, a team dynamic for learning new processes. Interesting. Thank you.
Learning team building skills, express like hidden skills you've got, find out about your teammates, or even duty of care right now in the face of designing an actual Lego Serious Play workshop on the duty of care, where we want to get people in one room and build the future of work, build duty of care, like physically with bricks, and they've got a visible output. Don't be confused, since you mentioned you love Lego in terms of like what is Lego designed for. It's not that you have to be an expert representing stuff. It's all about metaphors.
Isn't life a metaphor? No. So what would you share with us on this traditional question that we ask every guest? And I'm really intrigued by your response here. What is the one overlooked place, person, book, or even experience that you feel that the listeners should know about?
I'll go for a place that I only discovered when I moved here to Northeast England. So I'm originally German. It's Newton by the Sea. Newton by the Sea near Annick. Annick Castle is where part of the Harry Potter movies were filmed. Newton by the Sea is a wonderful, wonderful place. As you can tell from the name, it's by the sea. A little cottage is there. Brilliant restaurants and fantastic place. Like, where it's just like, if there's one place where you can find peace, it's probably there.
One last question before we have you share with the audience, you know, where they can learn more about yourself, the Res Forum, etc. But just a quick thing: we've been talking about duty of care today. The other side of the coin is duty of loyalty, in the sense that the employee owes their company something. And I often hear us, we often focus on duty of care, but I've been involved in some situations where, you know, the company kind of expected the employee to be loyal in a certain way, and we're not. How often does that ever come up? The scenario I had was actually a company wanted to evacuate an employee from a particular country, and the employee said, no, I won't go.
Okay.
And they basically, the company says, hold a second here. We deployed you there. We think it's unsafe. We need you out of there. And it was a huge struggle, and it was a really unique experience. I wasn't immediately involved in it, but we were providing the healthcare and the evacuation services. It was a completely big eye-opener to me. So quick comment on duty of loyalty.
Well, duty of loyalty, good question. To answer your one part, no, it actually never pops up. It's about the duty of care part. If you ask me if there's a duty of loyalty from an employee perspective, I would say yes, to a certain extent. But then again, I mean, we can't forget, in particular the developments around all the new forms of work and protein careers and then self-managed careers. I mean, we are beyond these times where you basically start a job and then retire in the same company. So it's kind of normal if you switch jobs in between. And people go more from managing their corporate career, their corporate life, going to managing their individual career. So I think the loyalty, to a certain extent, yeah, it's there. It's not a one-way road. And the more that's coming from the company, the more loyalty you can expect. If you deliver the bare minimum, don't expect the extra mile.
Okay. So you've pulled the curtain back on many topics that reference other environments quite a bit. So where can we learn more about you, your work, and these other organizations? We'll include these links, of course, in our show notes and on our site. But those who are listening and want to immediately jump to another link, where should they go?
Well, the first and easiest thing is probably LinkedIn. I've got my LinkedIn page, so you can reach out there. If you happen to be considering to become a student, join Newcastle University. Great university, great place. Then you will certainly, if you study business, you can see me in the classroom. I'm going to be another Rest Life event, June 24th, I think. That's open for anybody who's interested. Go to LinkedIn, reach out there, and take it from there.
Well, thank you, Ben. Great conversation today. Also, when I think of Newcastle, I think of a fine beer I used to drink quite frequently. Another great reason to think of Newcastle also. Now, I really appreciate your time today. We learned a lot. Andrew, I'll go to you first, what you learned today, and then I'll hopefully come back to me at a couple things I learned and share with our audience.
Well, before today, I didn't know about the Lego learning system. So that's one thing that I'm certainly going to investigate further. I do love those quiet getaways in England. I've had many that I've enjoyed. So I'll be looking into Newton by the Sea.
A big takeaway today is, for me, is obviously duty of care continues to be evolving topic. And it also is evolving as the employee-employer relationship changes. I look forward to catching up with Benjamin again, you know, down the line, because things are going to continue to change there. It's really interesting to me also to learn a little bit more about the Res Forum. Res Forum does a lot of great surveys and assignment policy. So when you go to Ben's website or go to LinkedIn, you'll learn a lot there too. So thank you everybody for listening today. We want to remind you the New Nomad is not just a podcast, but it's a community of people, ideas, and spirit. We really want you to take advantage of that location independent lifestyle. Please look in at us at thenewnomad.net or insurednomads.com. Please leave us a nice review, share the podcast with others, and thank you for joining us today. Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in to the New Nomad Podcast, where we bring together an incredible community of people and ideas that embody the nomadic spirit. Please remember to subscribe and leave a review. For more amazing tips to help you take advantage of the cross-border lifestyle, please visit us at insurednomads.com/podcast. See you next week.